When we say let's go out to the River Islands guest line, because one of our absolute favorites, kind enough to join us today, we feel there is an analyst like no other, and that is Sean Salisbury, who's joining us now on Willard and Dibbs. Hey, Sean, what's good?
Hey, guys, all good, and it's a pleasure to be on with you. You know, I love joining you, so thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, thank you for doing it. We're excited about this one. Thousands of questions. Let me ask you this, though. When you look at the Kansas City Chiefs now, how would you describe the evolution of a team that used to kind of be about Patrick Mahomes and right now, Sean, honestly looks like it's more about their defense?
It is. And even think about this last year, guys. For part, I mean, Mahomes is always Mahomes making plays, but you tell me who carried them most of the year last year. Defense. Steve Spagnuolo right now is NFL's best, and I don't mean just pressure blitz-wise. He's the best, like, under-pressure defensive coordinator. He loves big games, and this is another one for him. You should expect him to thrive. But it really has been about a year and a half that the Chiefs' defense has been, I don't say the only reason, because when Mahomes and Kelce and Andy Reid are on the team, you'll find ways to put the ball in the end zone or win games. But isn't it amazing? This team, you lose a fast receiver, somebody else comes in. You lose a running back, you go get Kareem Hunt. You lose somebody, I mean, there's nobody better at restocking, and even if the restock is not an A, it's a B or a B minus, Andy Reid elevates them. But just when you need somebody to step up and play dominant, the defense has been really good. Their front seven's fierce. They can cover on the back end. They'll press you, and Spagnuolo's the best at finding that little gap and says, here's how we attack this weakness. And, man, they got a lot of buy-in. It really, as you look at them, guys, do they look like a dominant team? Statistically, they don't. I'm talking about it overall.
Yeah.
Yet every time, if it's late and they got a chance, the field goal kicker is going to make it. Mahomes is going to get you a few plays off schedule and then make that one comeback throw first down. Andy's going to give you something in the red zone. And Kelce erupted last week, but in truth, the first three or four games, he hadn't been doing much either. So this team, so cliche, but in truth, it is their defense that carries them, and we're saying that about a team that's got the best tight end in football. I mean, I'll throw Kittle in, but the best receiving tight end in football normally, the best quarterback in football, and the best play caller and head coach offensive coordinator combo in the league, and yet it's the defense. If the defense doesn't play well, I'm not sure they scare you anywhere other than quarterback and tight end offensively, which is a tribute to them.
Yeah, and defensively they scare you because the coordinator and also for Chris Jones. And Mark and I were just talking about what do you do with a guy who can wreck you in the A-gap? You can double him, but if he beats your double team, what are you left with, Sean?
Yeah, that's such a great point because we hear it every time. Well, chip. No, we don't chip. Backs don't chip in the interior. You know, you guys did say, but here, well, how do we double him? Well, when you do that, and, you know, guys, we've watched Chris Jones beat double teams, too, in this league, right? And that poses a problem. So you double him on every pass play or when you double him and then the guard gets up to the linebacker in the run game, however you go about it. The crazy thing about it is then it frees up a lot of people to do their thing, so they're going to see a lot of one-on-one in protection. Even his presence, we used to see that with the Rams, guys. And still, when Aaron Donald was playing it and winning MVP, it's like, and J.J. Watt, it's like, we're going to double him. And Aaron Donald, especially inside, Watt moved around, especially inside. You're like, well, that's fine. He still can beat it and push you back into the backfield in the run and pass game and getting your quarterback's vision at his legs in the middle of it. But it just makes everybody, your second and third guy, it's like having two phenomenal receivers. Then the third guy catches 90 balls because you can't double them all. And it's much more difficult when you've got a guy who's a good run defender, but a run disruptor, but also has the pass those of a guy who plays on the edge. So that is such a good point, and not only valid, but something that that is one of the greatest advantages. I don't know how you guys are, but I've always said I build football teams and defenses, and I guess kind of like baseball, you know, up the middle, but inside out. That inside, the dominant guy who can disrupt and rush the passer, a quarterback, a great center, you know, a middle linebacker. I believe you build it inside out, and they've got a guy that everybody else feeds off, and he is a game wrecker to every sense of the word because of his ability to do both. He's a two-dimensional football player, and he plays with an attitude and a motor, so he doesn't take many plays off, and it's hard. So what you do is you double-team him, and you better hope your tackles are at their best, and then they start to do those games outside, loops and stuff outside to try and create confusion to get your good players off their good players, and then all of a sudden you get a free runner with a linebacker. So incumbent that backs are going to have to step up and thump, but it is really, really hard to spend 65 plays a game doubling the guy and then hoping everybody can hold up on the outside, because you cannot chip on the inside. It does require a 300-pound double, and if you're going to just block him by yourself, well, you better be able to dress in a phone booth, because that guy's really good.
Sean Salisbury joining us here on Willard and Dibbs, 95.7 The Game. Sean, this is just me, the sports fan, talking. I feel like when there's a matchup where one of the teams kind of clearly needs the game more than the other team, they usually get it. That's not to say the Chiefs aren't motivated, but I clearly feel like the 49ers need this game more than the Chiefs, and for that reason, I give them kind of an edge. Have you been in that situation? Is that a thing?
I think it is, and you know what's crazy about it, guys, and I don't mean, it's not like I'm blowing smoke at Kansas City, but Andy Reid sure doesn't feel like the guy to take it for granted, right? And I don't. And here's another thing, and it's a very valid point that you're making, but think about this. We've all watched, it seems like they're on national TV every friggin' minute, right, every week. So we all see most of their games on a national level as the game of the week, whether it's Sunday in the afternoon this week or Monday or Sunday or Thursday. Have you seen them play a great game yet this year? I'm talking about where it's like you come out of it saying, that's a Super Bowl champ. I mean, you haven't. It's been bits and pieces and defense. So when you go through that, and I'm only going to say this about compared to the Texans, because I'm around it every day here. They're 5-1, and guys, they've played kind of average at times, been good in parts. They have not played a complete game. And so last week, everybody called it a trap game playing, you know, their game last week. Well, this looks like a trap game in New England. No, they buried them because they realized they haven't played a complete game. So with Kansas City, I don't believe their team feels like that they've been that team, oh my gosh, so explosive, they're going to hang 40 on you. They've kind of had to grind it out like a blue-collar team that doesn't dominate you. They're good at a lot of things, and we know they can do it, but they're not great at a lot of things on offense. Now, you get Xavier Worthy the ball in space, which Andy will create stuff like that and create. He's like a good bat. You guys know this with the great basketball teams you had there. Andy's the guy who gets his guy the ball on the spot where he wants to catch and shoot. He does that with his players on offense, so they're comfortable, even though they're not filled. You know, Juju Smith-Schuster coming back after he's gone. Again, I mentioned Kareem Hunt. So I believe that I think the 49ers are going to win the game. I do, because they also, there's got to be a sense of urgency, finally getting at least close to as fully healthy as they can be, even though McCaffrey, and I think Jennings is out as well. But they still have weapons, and they also have struggled to put that full, oh my gosh, game recently. I like the San Francisco 49ers at home, and that has something to do with it. And I don't think the Chiefs are going to come in, oh, we're okay, we can afford to lose, because of the element of who they're playing. They're not playing a team they're supposed to dominate. The 49ers are supposed to be a dominant team in the NFC. So I think that helps them guard against it. But yes, if you're talking about urgency and putting yourself at a point where you're in a chase mode, that's not the Chiefs, that's the 49ers. And teams that are well-coached and disciplined, they feel like that they understand the sense of urgency. I like a close one, but I actually think defenses are going to win in a lot of these battles this week. I think the 49ers are a field goal favorite in my mind at home.
Yeah, and favored by one, Sean Salisbury here on 95.7 The Game. When you talk about closing, why have the Niners been unable to close in these games where they've got, you know, three losses, but two of them, they had big leads in the second half?
Yeah, guys, I don't like that trend, do you? I don't like the trend.
No, at all.
It kind of goes with what you said about, well, you know, the sense of urgency for the 49ers in this game over the Chiefs, yet where has been the 49ers' sense of urgency with leads to put their foot on the throat? Now, guys, we can sit back and say it has to be injuries, and it does matter. Let's face that. You can't take McCaffrey, even though they've had some production in the backfield, you can't take McCaffrey out of the lineup and say, hey, we're just as good. No, you're actually not. But that's why this team is consistently winning the last handful of years. Somebody else does their gig a little bit better that day. So, yeah, that's something, guys, a time, you know, when it happens once, you say it's called the NFL. It happens twice, you say, all right, we're going to give them up. This is the 49ers, or this is the Chiefs, or this is Baltimore. When it happens three times, if it happens again and they've got a lead and can't close, then you start to say that's a trend and I got a problem. But the reason I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt on that and say, you know, I don't know if I believe much in coincidences, but the other team's getting paid too, is because of where they come from, who they are, and the roster, guys. when they're healthy and playing, the roster is really, really good. We know the quarterbacks is efficient and can make every play. We know that they're getting healthy and they can run it when they got their when Debo and McCaffrey are there. But once again, how's Kyle going to dial up in a pressure game, in a big moment, and being able to offensively get the things going you want to get going when, in fact, you don't have your best weapon to get him in the pass game and the run game? So, yeah, man, this is something, the sense of urgency. And I want to see a fast start, but I also, to your point, want to see them score 17 points in the fourth quarter to prove to us that this is who they are, because I have a hunch that there's a chance that now they got to pick it up. But we could very well, because the NFC, the up and down, and the 49ers and the Vikings and the way the NFC North is playing, Detroit, I mean, there's good teams. We could very well see this team again, because at some point the 49ers are going to go on a roll where they win 5-6 in a row. And so you'll start to get the talk again. Will this be a rematch of another rematch? And grudge doesn't matter. That was last year. We're heavy into it. There's injuries. It's not a Super Bowl. But you still have it in your crawl that says, these guys have gotten us a couple more times than we've gotten them. It matters. So I would expect them to be able to close with the lead this time, even though they don't have their closer in McCaffrey.
Sean, emotionally, what does it do for the 49er locker room to have Ricky Pearsall making his debut?
Am I because he's back is in, and he's able to play, you know, is it? Do you feed off the energy? Sure you are. Now you wish that wasn't the way you had to get it, but there's always that energy with a teammate that's your shot of Red Bull. But you guys also know, while pregame and the week going on, he's going to be jacked up. They're going to be fired up, and it's going to be awesome, and the crowd's going to go nuts. But like anything, like the old Mike Tyson, once you get punched in the face, his performance on the field is going to be more important than that energy can't carry you through four quarters, because once you get it in the mouth, now you're fighting and scratching to battle the team that you're playing against and the guy you've got to block and the guy you've got to tackle. But there's no doubt, not just the energy of a football game, but the guy's life. You never know what could have happened, and he's rehabbed it and back, and I think we're all anticipating this. It'll be a great story. But still, while the energy leading into, you're going to just have football energy regardless of this, but it's going to be a great energy and great pregame and watching them come out of the tunnel in the locker room. But I'm sure when they get to the stadium and all practice week long, there's been a different vibe on the practice field, knowing that a guy was shot, you know, a while back, and now he's going to make his debut, and it's going to be pretty exciting. But the Kansas City Chiefs don't care about that. They care about the player, I'm sure, but they don't care about the momentum you've got going into a game. They plan on thumping you and saying, now it's football, once all that the hype and all the talk is gone after pregame.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, the emotion of it is huge. And when he came to practice this week, it became a big thing, and the team rallied around
awesome.
Him. But even beyond that, I think about Ricky Pearsall as a player who looks to be a good route runner and possibly a good man beater. How important would it be to have that sort of a receiver against a KC team that all but pressed you into submission last year in February?
No, I think it's awesome, and you're right. All the talk, of course, the guys, the story is the guy overcoming this, and I think it's a phenomenal story, and I'm sure it would have been fun to see the practice and the vibe and see the reaction all week long. I can tell you this, though. He is a very precise and dynamic route runner, and how awesome would this be? Don't you guys kind of feel when you're riding that in-game momentum that wouldn't you come out of the tunnel and in your first series get him the ball just to get his hands on? I would. get him the ball, get him going. Because guys like this can make a difference. And we talked about full team energy. What about just the single guy energy, how they elevate in times when you're like, man, you know, if the bullet hits somewhere else different, who knows where I'd be right now. So it's all the emotions he'll go through, but precise route runner. And regardless of the grudge of coming back and trying to win, you don't want to get pounded into submission because you're a little bit embarrassed at times, and that doesn't go away. When you're bullied, you can get beat by a team finessing you to death. We've all been there. It's like, come on, you got a lucky knockout punch and you landed it. I want a rematch. It's when the guy comes and hits you in the mouth 10, 15, 20 times, and Kansas City's defense did that some in the Super Bowl, that's the one you want. You want the rematch. So Pearsall's energy, getting some revenge on a Super Bowl game that they want and hoping that they get a chance again at the end of the season. But the psychological thing carries over here, guys. You get your butt whipped in this one, And then you're like, well, wait a second now. Yeah. I don't like that trend. But you go beat Kansas City and you send a message before the midway point that last year doesn't matter anymore. We'll see you guys again.
Sean Salisbury with us on Withered and Dibs. Sean, before you go, would love to get your perspective on the conversation we've been having before you came on. And there's so much talk about how the Chiefs have had the 49ers number. And sure, there's Andy Reid and there's Kyle Shanahan and their matchups. But I start thinking about this today and I'm like, I see the Brock 49ers as a different entity than the Jimmy Niners. And therefore, I look at Brock's Niners as 0-1. What is your perspective on that conversation?
100% agree. 100% agree. I just think that Brock's a better playmaker all around. I do. That doesn't mean one's 10 times more. I just do. I think there's and you guys know we've had conversations about Jimmy in the past. I thought at times Jimmy got an unfair rap, and every time they lost, it was blamed on him. But Jimmy missed throws that you have to make in big games. Now, I'm not talking about the tight window throw. I'm talking about the guy that's wide open. The easy ones you can't miss. They're the best players in the world. They'll make the big plays or the tight window plays. But Breeze and Manning and Mahomes, the great ones make the simple play all the time. The ball didn't hit the ground. And I think that's where an advantage. And I just think there's a little bit when you've been the seventh-round pick, you've been a guy who wasn't supposed to be playing NFL football or just grinding to be a practice squad guy, and now you're the guy, and he's proven it over now 2+ years. Yeah, this isn't this different. And if we're going to put all the emphasis on that position, which we do at quarterback, then how can we talk about, well, all they got their number? They got their number once. Okay, so you're exactly right. And now fully get him healthy and get him going, at least as close to health as you can get, not having McCaffrey in that gig there. But I think Brock Purdy, in truth, there's just a different mentality about his game. I just think he's a better quarterback than Jimmy. Doesn't matter what we got to do. I just do, and I think he thrives on these moments. I expect him to have a big game tomorrow and at least handle the duress that he's going to face, or Sunday, that he's going to face.
Sean, you're the best, man. Thank you so much for making some time for us.
Guys, you're always great with the question. It's always awesome to come on with you. I look forward to it again. Thank you.
There it is. Sean Salisbury on Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Always good. Yep. And I like him having an appearance because he's astute, but he's not afraid to give an opinion as well. And a lot of people in his spot will hem and haw and defer to this or defer to that. He gives opinion. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
And he defended you, and I like it, even though he defended you 100% about the idea that it's just one game. It's not four in a row against KC. It's one in a row against Brock Purdy.
He likes the Niners this weekend.
He does, by a field goal, which is...
Well, he sort of pitched that as, like, if he were building the spread.
Yeah.
He says Niners by 3.
Oh, yeah.
Which, if you're a gambler, and you know the way, like, the pros do it...
Yep.
You know, the best in the world hit about 57% of the time.
That's yeah.
Because all they're betting. Well, and they're betting. We do.
Thought I'd slide that by you. I'm no longer hot. And I'll give you my pick on this game, and it may have just changed.
Can't wait, except before you're allowed to give another pick, you need to sit in the muck and the mud of an absolutely, I was about to say disgusting, but phenomenal. Outstanding.
You're welcome.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Fade the Dibbers effort last night.
It's what I do for you and Grandy and all the listeners, because if I really am this bad at it and you all think that I am, well, then yesterday was one of those ones where you like, thank you, next, Ariana Grande.
Brother, my whole goal.
Yes, Grandy, clap into the mic. Thank you.
My whole goal is to get you to stop feeling these picks the way you do. I want, when you miss one, and when you miss one bad, like you did last night, I want you to...
I feel like Clay Thompson last night.
I want you
to
come
in...
No. Clank. Anyway.
That was my guru.
It's pretty good. I want you to come in the next day with chest out. The segment is not called, let's see if our favorite guy, Dan Dibley, can get one right.
Dude, I used to do wagertainment.
It's
I was a professional gambler on the radio.
Fade the Dibbers. When you absolutely gack one like you did last night.
That's on Rattler. That's not on the Dibber.
Which is pretty, pretty consistent.
Dude, that thing got away from me.
I want you to walk in here and be like, you're welcome.
If I start to do that... then I'm going to start intentionally trying to pick losers, which would mean that I win.
Don't do that.
No, and that's why I can't come in here with my chest puffed out, because I make these picks based on what I really, really think.
I want you to be one person on the way in and a different person on the way out. It's like a trip to Vegas.
But if I'm a different person on the way out, then that's going to affect the way I pick on the way out. I need to stay in my process.
You got to compartmentalize. Get over it fast. Turn the page.
No, I'm over it.
Okay, then you're good.
I will not let it change what I do, because if you really want to fade me, if you really want to think that I'm 45%.
I want to fade you.
Am I 11-14 now on the year?
Yeah, what's the record, Randy?
If you fade every one of your picks, you'd be 11-9-1. In your last 10, fading Dibs is 7-3 in the last 10.
Yeah, that's money. That's money. And if you won't peacock, I will, because this is our show and we're making people money.
I'm not going to peacock because I'm 3-7.
Then I will. We're 7-3.
You guys are.
Rest of us, of humanity. Major bag alert. I'm sending bicep emojis out to everybody I know. We are making our listeners money.
Cash me out one time.
No, cash me out 7 times.
Of 10.
Fade the Dibbers.
Well, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I've got a lock for you on Sunday, Niners Chiefs. And although hearing Salisbury, Sean Salisbury, he's got me a little bit wobbly.
You just follow your gut. We don't need you following anybody else's gut.
Well, then let me just say this.
We want to know what's in there.
Let me say this.
What do you want to say?
The pick is in.
I know it is.
The pick is in. And it's back and forth, but this morning I went on with KC Radio,
whoop,
and I gave them the pick.
Oh.
And they said, the pick is in?
They said, the heck you say?
Well, we actually talked about Fade the Dibber, too.
Oh, so they know.
It was a pretty fun hit. Well, I had to let them know that your boy's been cold since about second term Clinton.
Okay, so if you picked the Chiefs, then they were like, oh, crap.
I'll just tell you that the pick is in.
Okay.
And if you listen to the Dibber across multiple markets, then you know, because the pick is in. And they were either happy about it or unhappy about it.
Markets.
Yeah.